Thanks, Tanya. Now, just checking that what you see on the screen is the presentation mode. And great. All right. Well, a big welcome to everyone who's joining. It's great to see you. And especially if you're a first-time attendee to an ODF session, I want to give you an especially big welcome. I'm Jodie Goulden. I'm on the board of the ODF. I'm an independent org design consultant. I'm with experience working in leadership roles and as a consultant to large multinational corporations. And one thing that I have learned from the work I've done is this, that companies are full of amazing and smart and talented people who are really motivated to do good in the world, to have a positive impact. And where org design comes in is that the way that organizations are designed can limit their efforts, or if organizations are designed well, that can help people to have an impact. I'm a big believer that corporations have an important role to play in as a positive, as a force for good. And as an org design consultant, my way of contributing to that is helping to design organizations so that they can make that positive impact. And that's why I just wanted to share, that's why I'm really excited to be working with Bernard on the topic of regenerative business, which means business that does good and makes money. And regenerative business is not just for startups or nonprofits. We want to show you how you can help that we can move all businesses towards regenerative business. Bernard, how about you?
Thanks. Jody and I have a lot in common, partly her perspective on organization design, which I spent 40 years doing. And a couple of years ago, I switched to this work, which is what I'm doing now is some research and development. We're developing tools and practices to help businesses become more regenerative. I realized that in the 40 years of working, I focused primarily on how the organization was functioning inside. So my work, was focused on what we would call organization design, how people connected with each other, how they collaborated, how they innovated, and so on. And my passion really was both about helping a client system become competitive, become successful. But my passion was also about helping the people inside of the organization create a workplace, create workplaces that they wanted to be part of, that they wanted to come to work on Monday morning, and so on. But the focus was on the inside. And a couple of years ago, one of my friends and colleagues, David Cooperrider, suggested, "Hey, what if we changed our focus from the inside to the outside?" And I wonder what the hell does that mean? And so I started to ask myself, what is it that we as a community of practitioners could accomplish if we shifted our focus from helping our client systems win in the world that we have to helping our client systems win by creating a better world? So that is what I've been working on the last couple of years, and I'm delighted to be here with Jody and have this chance to talk with you about it. Let me start with where, we all start with our work. We try to understand the world around us and how we might be impacted by it or what opportunities or challenges it gives us. Some of you may be familiar with the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. They were created in 2017, I think. And what I like about them is they cover the domain of social good, of economic good, and environmental good. So they're very comprehensive. And in 2023, the United Nations published a progress report, and it was less than wonderful. I'll just summarize it by saying, it basically said that maybe a quarter of our goals we're making progress on. The rest are either moving backwards or we're not making progress on them at all. The goals are for 2030, so this is not a long time horizon. And if you looked at them, you would say, you know, we can achieve this, but we're not achieving it. And if you look at the little bubble on the right-hand side of the screen, you know, the way I think about this is we have three sectors in society that can help us achieve those goals. There is the government sector, of course, both at the federal, at the state, and at the local level. And then there's civil society, which incorporates education and not-for-profits and so on. I think both of those sectors, you know, have been pushing towards, by and large, the UN SDGs, but they are limited, and perhaps even more so now than they used to be in their capability, their capacity to achieve those goals, which I think we would all say we want to create for our children. So I'm particularly interested in that third leg of that stool of the business sector and how it might contribute to helping us create those goals. Another part of the context really is, you know, I think we just have to acknowledge that we are in the midst of a major shift in narrative. Narratives about climate response, about the social good, narratives about free markets, whether we want to be in them or not, narratives about, you know, the positive or the negative of immigration. We're upending, you know, up alliances between people that have been allied for many, many years are fraying. Foreign aid is very much in the air. So we are in the midst of, you know, what the Chinese symbol talks about as crisis and opportunity. You know, both of those I think are present for us. But never in my history have we been in the midst of such incredible change. At the same time, I'm aware that business has had a history of being regenerative, of creating a better world. Certainly, not all of business all the time has created a better world. But there are many, many cases to be made that business has had a positive impact around the world in terms of lifting people out of poverty, mitigating damage, and so on and so on. And more of that is happening. And of course, that doesn't get a lot of play in the media, but if you search for it, we can find examples. I think it's also true that consumers and investors and employees still value what we call ESG, you know, which is a focus on things that go beyond the bottom line. That value, that attraction to that within business has not gone away. And increasingly, the opportunities for business to identify and to seize and to benefit from opportunities to become regenerative in their communities, in the world at large, those opportunities are becoming more visible. So that's a high-level view of our context. Could I have the next slide, please? Let me talk quickly about regenerative business. Jody introduced this idea, but you know, it's really a notion that comes from observation that we have made by doing our research that it's very clear that both the enterprise and society at large, as well as our local communities, can benefit, you know, when there is a shift in the business from what we have called sometimes sustainability, sometimes corporate social responsibility, but a shift from a focus that says, let's do less harm, you know, let's reduce our carbon footprint, let's not discriminate, from that kind of net zero impact shift to a net positive impact. If you haven't read the book, there's a wonderful book by Paul Polman called Net Positive, and it's his 10 years at Unilever. But net positive really is about the business engaging actively to make things better, to repair, to restore, to revitalize our communities, in ways that also create value for the enterprise. So we're not talking about here about a concept that is philanthropic, but rather we're talking here about a shift perhaps in a business model perspective. It is a way for a business to become prosperous. Let me share with you a very quick, small example. Here in Maine, we have a regional bank. It's called the Androscoggin Bank, and which is going to be profiled both on CNBC and the BBC shortly. But what makes them interesting as a case study is they have only about 150 people that work for them, and they're about a $45 million a year business. So they're not, mega, but they're not insignificant either. They became aware that in our state, we have a significant community of Muslims who are, because of their religion, prohibited from accessing the money they need to buy houses, to start business, et cetera, because it involves interest, which is against the Muslim religion. The bank said, hey, this is both a need in the community and it's something that we can help with because we are in the business of developing products that allow people to access money. That's what we do, that's our strength. So they worked collaboratively with members of that community. They worked collaboratively with other stakeholders like regulators at both the state and the federal level. And they developed an innovative product that now allows these folks to get access to the funds that they need to buy a home, to start a business, to put their kids through college, whatever. So that's an example of what we mean by regenerative business. It's an example that says here's a way that a business can actually use the capabilities that it has to do good in our community and to prosper. Clearly, the prosperity comes from they have more clients now. They have people that are starting businesses who come and use them as a place to deposit the money. They have people that refer the bank to other people. And in this banking, local banking is a very highly competitive industry. So these are not insignificant things. Their employees feel more energized by the fact that they're engaging in this kind of outreach, in this kind of making the world a better place. So that's a small example. I would again just highlight that for us, regenerative business really is about developing profitable new products or services that actually address social or environmental problems within the ecosystem that the business operates. It may also involve changing internal or external value chain operations to increase efficiencies. But again, it's about doing that in ways that address the social or environmental challenges that we are all painfully aware of sometimes. Lastly, I would say there are some strong organization design implications here from all of this. One is that as designers, I think we have the capability to offer services which enhance the strategic clarity for building competitive advantage through profit from purpose. So it's not a case of these things going side by side, profit and purpose. So, 5 days a week we'll focus on profit and on Sundays we'll focus on purpose. It's more a question of, how can we help our client systems get strategic clarity so that the connection of profit that comes from pursuing purpose is very clear. And we also have the capacity, I think, as a community of practice to develop the structures, the systems, the processes, so that they in fact support the important capabilities here, which are opportunity seeking. The bank would never have gone down this road had they not been able to find that opportunity. So designing the processes that allow opportunity seeking is critical. Designing the structures and systems that support ecosystem engagement is important. We cannot address social system or economic issues in our communities and in our world without collaborating, without co-creating the solutions. So ecosystem engagement becomes critical. And, for some companies that have been around a long time, this is a no-brainer. For others, it's still a new frontier. Innovation in terms of products and services is absolutely critical. It's great to have an opportunity, but if we can't seize that opportunity by innovating either at the level of products or services or value chain operations, we don't get the benefit. And lastly, I think we all know how important the process of testing, learning, and then being able to scale up from prototypes to a larger level of implementation is critical. All of these really, from my perspective, are powerful organization design opportunities. I'll stop there.
Thank you for that. I'm going to talk about more about some of those things. So I love the banking example. When people want to learn more about that, definitely follow up with Bernard. I want to talk some more about, so what are the barriers to succeeding as a regenerative business? And you might be thinking about some of the bigger external forces, some of which Bernard has mentioned as being the barriers to doing business in this way. But I want to bring us back into what are the organizational issues that we're seeing. And you can think of this as thinking about the things that are within the control of businesses today. So there's a list of issues here, and it starts really with business strategy. If regenerative business is not included in the strategy, if it's not clear, written down, and agreed how regenerative business will create financial value, then it is unlikely to be successful. And then there are situations where there are not dedicated roles for doing the work of regenerative business. So it is wonderful that people are motivated to work on regenerative business projects on top of their usual job. But this is not sustainable for bringing to life regenerative business. Another common pattern that I see in my work is a desire to only communicate success stories, not just externally to the market, but even internally. There's this need to constantly talk about how good things are going. I hear people saying, well, our products are already good for the environment, for example. But this goes along with an unwillingness to identify areas for improvement and to invest in the necessary capability building that it takes to be successful in regenerative business. When it comes to decision processes, many companies are set up and designed to reduce risk. And usually there's very good reasons behind that. But the innovation that you need for regenerative business, it requires calculated risk-taking. So the risk-averse approach might not be working very well. And related to this, budgeting and rewards are typically or usually linked to short-term performance. And so this reduces the incentive to support regenerative businesses that require a longer time to achieve profitability. And finally, some companies are saying they don't have the right skills and talent for regenerative business, which can be different to their current business. So there's a big change required, and it might require a different skill set. So just to put all of that into context, these are things that I've noticed in my client network. And that is, it is, as I said before, mostly bigger companies. They tend to be operational, and quite traditional businesses like chemicals, energy, agriculture. But I try to distill these into a set of common organizational barriers. I know that you all have got a whole lot of different experiences to me and to Bernard. So please feel free to share in the chat some of your experiences that are different from these and let us know, where you're coming from, what kind of industry or what kind of context you're seeing that in. I want to go to another slide. And this slide shows Jay Galbraith's STAR model, which is a framework for thinking about an organization as a whole system. If you're not familiar with the STAR model, or if you really want to learn more about it, don't worry. Feel free to follow up with me after the call, and we can talk more about the STAR model. Some of you might use this model or something like it all the time. The point of this slide is, I'm not going to spend much time on it, but the point is that as an org design practitioner, this is a framework that you can use to diagnose and understand the barriers that you see in organizations. All of those bullet points from the previous slide are just copied onto this slide. They're mapped onto the STAR model. So this is a way of helping you understand where you might make changes in the organization system to overcome some of those barriers. So having shared with you some of the barriers I've noticed in my work, we'd really like to know what you've noticed. So we thought we'd do a quick poll. Tanya, if you can put up the poll, to find out which of these barriers is most common from your perspective, just for fun. Be really interesting to hear. Thanks, Tanya. So please go ahead and vote for which of those resonates most with your experience.
I usually give about 30 seconds, so we've got a good portion of you have responded. I'll give it another few. All right, looks like everybody has responded here.
You share? Okay. So I can see the results that we have 42% of you voting for unclear strategy. And the second highest is 29% with decision processes. So that's really interesting. Strategy would have been the one that I think I see the most as well. So thanks so much for sharing that. Also, if there are barriers that you observe that were not on that list, I'd love to hear about them. And so feel free to share them in the chat. There's probably plenty more things which are making it really hard to be successful in regenerative business. Okay, so it's our goal in this session to share how organization design can be applied to help regenerative business succeed. So I'm going to share a couple of slides on what we as org design practitioners can do. Let's see, what can we do? And this is based on what has helped me in my work. So for regenerative business challenges, what services can we offer? Bernard and I talked about what is the org design secret sauce? And I know that some of you are very experienced org design practitioners. You already probably have some of these services in your toolkit, and some of you are coming from other disciplines, or you're just starting out. In that case, you can use this list as a kind of list of things you might want to learn more about. I won't go through this whole list, but I'll talk about a few things. If you have questions or you've got some other ideas to share, please write in the chat. I'm going to pause in a few minutes to check for questions and respond to whatever you write in the chat. But on this slide, starting from the top, if it's not clear, if you're working with or in an organization and it's not clear how regenerative business is integrated in the strategy, that's a good place to start. As an org design practitioner, you might deliver a strategy alignment workshop or a diagnosis using the STAR model. But if you're in a situation where the strategy is clear, or perhaps you have helped to clarify that, but then the question is how to set up the organization to deliver on the strategy, then as a practitioner, you can help to define critical organizational capabilities. That means defining what the organization needs to be really, really good at to deliver on the strategy. For example, one organization capability that might be critical for regenerative business is ecosystem engagement. Because collaboration with other partners like NGOs, government, or community groups is part of developing regenerative business. And when you have a well-defined set of, say, 5 to 8 organizational capabilities, as org design practitioners, we can help to identify design criteria. Those are the criteria that will guide the organization in selecting the best fitting organization structure and designing other organizational changes that can deliver success for the strategy. Now, in this session, there isn't time for me to cover all the challenges on this slide and all the services, but one more I want to talk about is the second from the bottom, how to build engagement and energy for change in the organization. So, as practitioners, we can facilitate a participative design approach. Let's say with, for example, whole-scale change. I know some of you are familiar with that. Or we can facilitate an appreciative inquiry approach. And Bernard, I think you didn't mention it in your intro, but as one of the pioneers of appreciative inquiry, I'm going to ask you to jump in here for just 1 minute to share what that is.
Sure. I was aware that as I was flipping through the chat, people talked about how so many organizations, not surprisingly, operate in silos. The Appreciative Inquiry Summit, which is a large group, large system event, is a wonderful way of breaking down those silos. And we know that one of the things that prevents collaboration in organizations is criticism. The marketing department says, no, it's not our problem. Sales says, no, it's not our problem. It's the marketing department, and so on. The appreciative inquiry process, as you know, probably is a process that says, let's focus on a couple of things. What's really working when it comes to whatever the task is, and how do we make it better? And what changes do we need in terms of the organization design? But what's unique to the appreciative inquiry process that I think many of you are familiar with is that not only is it highly participative, it's highly scalable, but it begins with that notion that there are things that you want to retain as you move forward. So it's not the throwing out of the baby with the bathwater. It's identifying what you want to keep and how to build on that. And it's a focus on possibility and solutions rather than a focus on problems that were yesterday's problems. And if we solve them, we're simply solving yesterday's problems.
Thanks, Bernard. There's a list of potential things we can do here, and I'm sure that there are many more things that you've all got. So if you actually Bernard and I are going to stay after the end of this call if anyone wants to talk about anything that we've talked about today, but feel free to follow up with us if you want to learn more about these things. But in the interest of time, I'm going to move on. So for those of you who like to be really clear on how this works in real life, I wanted to share two practical examples drawn from work I've done. In a real situation, these would be just one part of a more comprehensive program of work that comes from going through a step-by-step org design process, starting with strategy, defining capabilities, design criteria, and taking a participative approach to designing. But these might be two of the things that you could see coming out of a result of an org design. In the first example, the situation is that a company has new products in their portfolio for regenerative business, which in the long term are going to replace their existing products that are cash cows. So in the future, the new products will be more profitable. But today, the existing products, the cash cows, are more profitable. And the sales bonuses for salespeople are tied to profitability. So the salespeople who sell the new products are effectively penalized. The solution to this is tying sales of new products specifically to bonuses. Now, if that sounds simple, it is until you try to change a bonus scheme for salespeople in a big company. I know I see Kate Dixon is on this call. She's at least one of you is really an expert in making these kind of changes. So I hope Kate might agree that it's not so easy to change incentive systems. Thumbs up. In the second example, an innovation team has a mandate to develop products for regenerative business. The company has a stage gate process. That means a process that defines which innovation projects move forward. And that process prioritizes speed to market and it tries to weed out failures early. And that means that the innovation team only gets to work on the kind of safe bets and they don't get the support they need for high risk, high reward ideas. So the solution here is separating the research budget so that a portion is dedicated to regenerative business ideas, with a different set of criteria and longer timelines before those research efforts get cut. So those are an attempt to make it kind of really practical and real for you. I just want to check for any questions here. And perhaps there's some in the chat, or does anyone have a question they'd like to jump in and ask? Bernard, are there any in the chat? Because there's quite a lot of great stuff there that I haven't had a chance to read.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
A couple of people have referred to the issue of profitability in different ways. I think one person said, what about profitability? Can this stuff lead to profitability? And if it doesn't, will people within the organization pursue these ideas? Kate Dixon, on the other hand, suggested that, if you focus only on profitability, will that create a tension that that keeps you from looking at possibilities for product development, new service development, and so on? Great questions. One thing that I would offer is increasingly there is research that suggests a phenomena that at Case Western we're calling flourish mirroring, that is that the business mirrors what they are trying to do outside. So if they are trying to create a flourishing community outside, the research suggests that there is a mirroring effect that creates a level of energy, a level of innovation, a culture of commitment within the organization that mirrors the kind of good that is being done on the outside. So I think there is a legitimate basis for saying that in addition to the potential for new products or services that increase our market share, grow our business in different ways, or reduce costs, there's also the potential for our culture to become one of high engagement, high participation, high commitment from that mirroring phenomena.
Great question on that too. I would add to that, I think, I mean, just to, again, maybe just to kind of re-emphasize that it has to be, in my view, it has to be clear how the business opportunity will lead to profitability, will lead to making money for it to be successful. At least in a traditional operating business that I work in, if you are a not-for-profit, then profitability might be a different thing. But business is about making money, so we have to link that. I see it as a tension between long-term and short-term focus. And so I think one of the things that we can do is reframe, is look to facilitate conversations that are about the longer term. And help people to define what's going to happen in the longer term and then bring them back to say, what does this mean in the short term? So we can play with the time frame to help people understand what are we aiming for in the long term, but what are we doing in the short term in actions? Yeah. Great. Any other questions that anyone want? We've got time for maybe one more question before we go into some breakout discussions. Okay, well, save it all for the breakouts. Thanks for adding into the chat. I'm going to hand it to you, Bernard, to share about what are the breakout group questions.
Super, thank you. So we're going to have a short breakout of approximately 10 minutes or so. And I'd like you, of course, to make some quick self-introductions and then to share with each other whatever tips or services you currently offer in this arena. What are some things that have worked for you if you have started to work in the area of helping businesses move along the journey of becoming regenerative? What are the services you have offered to them? Anything else that you think would be useful for your colleagues to hear? And I'd like you to be ready to report back any ideas that really struck you that you feel are worth sharing. So if we can, we'll have Tanya put us into that breakout right now.
So I think we were planning on 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Yes, we're right on time. We're doing great. So 10 minutes is perfect.
Okay, so you'll see a countdown and then that'll give you a 60-second reminder and it'll pull everybody back together automatically. So you can just come in and come out without any effort on your part.
Thanks, Tanya.
You're welcome.
Okay, Bernard, I think we're all back. And you're on mute.
Thank
That's it.
you. I'd love to have anybody that would like to just raise their hand, and I mean, you can raise your hand just this way. I think we'll see you. Maybe if not, put your little emoji up so that we can hear. Who'd like to share anything that they heard that struck them as worth sharing?
I see Marcia's hand.
Hand up. Shall I dive in?
Yeah, please.
So there was some great things came through in this group, and I'll just whiz through five of them. very quickly. One, the first two were, well, many of them are actually, but the first one was balanced scorecard. So to reset into a point of view where there are multiple bottom lines and there are multiple stakeholders, and how do we marry and blend it so it's not just only, as in the discussion we've been having about profit. The second is developing really high quality, clear goals that I think help discern these are the things we're going after. And whilst there are many, many other things we could be doing, we're very clear on what our priorities are. So, and a third one was using wonderful appreciative inquiry, which I think is, and the other one that went with that was polarity management. And both of them sort of speak to shifting the mindset maybe from what can often naturally be a, we've got to fix what's wrong with us, to a much more positive view about what could we be doing? What's the art of what's possible? And to sort of get away from that more negative perspective that is often the starting point for lots of companies. And then the final one I mentioned is a pre-mortem. So stepping into something that you might envisage, mock up almost a prototype of what a solution or an end state could be, and then really identifying its strengths and where it could break down, and working back from that.
Thank you. That's wonderful. How about somebody else?
I'll go. Great. So I share an example with the group. So I work for a company that's a B Corp, and we, and conscious capitalism was one of our founding sort of ethos of our organization. We sell eggs and butter. And so we, a big part of our design is a stakeholder model. And I just pulled it up. So our stakeholder model has farmers and suppliers, the girls that are cows and chickens, the environment, community, customers and consumers, crew members that are our staff, vendors, and stockholders. And we clearly have a decision-making framework that goes through all those stakeholder conversations before we launch both major initiatives. So, like, for example, to make this live, at our orientation we did probably 2 weeks ago, we were talking about our stakeholder model, how we make decisions, and sometimes it slows things down. We spent a lot of time also saying that as we look at these stakeholders, not every stakeholder at every context has an equal voice in the decision being made. Sometimes, for example, like recently we had an issue where farmers and avian influenza was a louder request than our crew. So we had to differentiate that because of our stakeholder model, this thing with avian influenza killing a lot of our chickens, in some ways we hear crew feedback, but we need to prioritize this decision here in the process. So baked into the design of our strategy, our questions, our philosophy, even my org design perspectives, is how do we show all these stakeholders are incorporated in our feedback methodology? And there's trust in that.
And one of the things that we liked about what Mike shared was that they did role plays. They didn't just talk about those.
We made a scenario on like avian influenza, which is currently hurting egg prices in the States. You know this. So we gave a little small scenario. We broke our new crew, 40 of them, up into small squads. We're like, hey, you're the farmer, you're the chickens, you're the investors. In your perspective, what do you think we should do to support our purpose? And there was a pretty strong dialogue between those areas. And we showed that, like, it's a little messy. And the messiness is part of how we operate through our organization and not just capitalism.
Nice. Quick question, Mike. When you do a stakeholder mapping, what's at the center of your map? Is it your organization? Is it something else?
Yeah, it's our mission. So it's our mission is to improve. Our mission is to improve the lives of people, animal, and the planet through food.
Yeah. See, I think that's an important nuance of difference. You know, if you put the challenge or the purpose or the mission at the center, you come up with different stakeholders than if you simply put the business at the center. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of our ongoing jokes that we say at our senior team meeting a lot is like, hey, if we want to make money, we can sell used cars. But at the core, our purpose is to improve the lives of people, animal, and the planet through food. Nice. How do we do that?
Nice. Thank you. Thank you. Anybody else?
Hard. I don't know how to raise hands anymore. I think Zoom has changed. I can't figure it out.
I know.
Okay. I'm Janet Sherlock. We were in group four. There was one thing that Jim mentioned that I thought was worth mentioning, and we ran out of time, so I didn't get to chime in from my unfortunate corporate perspective that I'd really like to share. One of the things that Jim said was that, you know, it's unfortunate, but oftentimes in order to incorporate some of these different elements in different companies, you do need to end up adding an additional function. And from an org design perspective, that does end up complicating things. And then from a profitability perspective, it ends up exacerbating because you've got additional departments that then have to further coordinate, and that can cause their own problems. I wanted to as well share some of my own perspective. I just recently joined the org design fray from corporate America. That seems to not be popular here, but Jody, I thought your call out about where it does need to actually have a business case. The thing I have to just add on to that, you're absolutely right, is that that needs to be very clear as to the timeline to achieve that. And when you're not achieving those milestones to get to that point, you need to really retrench and rethink. But I can tell you that from the apparel business, from the food service business, you know, Mike was talking about, you know, eggs and chickens. You know, if you work in the restaurant industry, if you work in the food service industry, most employees want to have cage-free eggs and have cruelty-free. Of course they want that. When you look at your consumers, you say they want that too, generally speaking. There are levels of consumers, depending on what thing it is that you sell and what you do, as to how much they're going to care about that and how much they're going to be able to consume the additional costs that might come from that. So you have to have a very clear line as to how to get to that point. One of my quote secret sauces that I've used in the past in the apparel industry is when something becomes regulatory in France, that you have to have traceability and trackability for every element of a particular garment, you use that to use your budget. Because when something's regulatory, the beauty of it is that everybody has to make those same investments. So if you do that in France, then you can apply that into the US, and that actually is a nice secret sauce. So while people look at doing compulsory regulatory things as being like, oh, you're only, you know, doing table stakes, that table stakes can enable you to actually impact things at a better level. It is a balance, and you know, there's a, you know, it's even in publicly, in privately traded companies or private companies, it's naive to think that you have to have that balance, and you have to be able to, no one can, your shareholders are not going to, and your employees eventually degrade if you can't make it so that they can actually enjoy the bonuses and the benefits and the pay that goes along with actually making money. I know it sounds evil and it sounds corporate. And
I really want this conversation to continue, but
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I hope you can stay on for a few minutes afterwards and we can keep going. Bernard, you're going to have do a really fast wrap up.
I'll do that. Yeah.
Do you want me to share?
Please, let's share the slide.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you can.
Sorry.
Janet, thank you for, you know, identifying the complexity. It is not easy work. So a couple of thoughts of where do we go from here? You know, this is an evolving field, helping businesses find opportunities to build a better world that also benefit the business, and then implementing, you know, seizing those opportunities. We can do that, I think, as a field. We can build this field together. We can develop the design practice and share them with each other. If you are interested in learning more about this, there's a bunch of, you know, lots of books on here. Some of them are the Paul Pullman book that I mentioned earlier on. There's the Cooperrider and Sellian book, wonderful book, Business of Building a Better World, Purpose and Profit by Seraphim at Harvard. One that I particularly like is the Economics of Mutuality Foundation People, Putting Purpose into Practice. You can also participate. I want to give a shout out to Jody's upcoming workshop at the Organization Design Forum conference. If you're new to this field and want to learn more about what is organization design, how can it be used for this and other purposes, I suggest you go there. You can also become what we call a practice leader or a thought leader by simply investing time and energy in this. We currently have a call for articles on this out. We're looking for just 250 word proposals by March 19th. If you'd like to know more about that, I can send you the call for articles, please contact me. And you can also, if you like, contact me to provide stories, cases for our upcoming book on this. So a bunch of opportunities for a path forward. Jody, do you want to wrap up?
Well, just and I'm respecting time. I know people are going to be dropping off, but we'll stay here for a bit of time if anyone wants to keep the conversation going. But just thanks so much, everyone who's joined. And thanks, Tanya and Bernard, for delivering this.
Well, thank you, Jody and Bernard, both for volunteering your time to put this together and collaborating with others in the community. As I mentioned, this is recorded, so I'll send a message out when the deck and the resources are available on our website. We have other upcoming sessions. Janet has just agreed to do a presentation for us next month on some of the work she's doing. I don't remember the title offhand, but that'll be another one of our future community conversations. And then we're also still looking for folks to continue to plan to join us at the conference. So I'll stay on the line for a few minutes, or you can chat me if you have any questions about the organization as a whole. In other words, I understand Bernard and Jody were going to stay on if there is a chance for some continuing conversation. In other words, we wish you a great rest of your day, and thank you for being here.
Thank you. And thank